Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. There are shifts we could make to build a better life and a better world in which to live. A change of perspective can change our world. According to today's guest, life can be exceptionally gratifying when we realize that our thoughts create our interactions and our interactions create our relationships. To truly relate is what living is all about. Our guest today is Mary Corning, author of the new book, Perfect Practice, A Philosophy for Living an Authentic and Transparent Life. Mary changes lives by defining the transformative power of pain. As a mentor, speaker, counselor, and writer, she clearly and compassionately models this process through her messages and stories. Mary extends her philosophy into the world of horses, where both people and horses benefit from realizing a different way to interpret challenge. Hello, Mary, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Hi, Paul. It's absolutely wonderful to be here.
Well, it was wonderful to read your book. I mean, it's the most amazing book I've read in a long time, Perfect Practice. And I can't tell exactly how to classify this book. What inspired you to write it? Let's start with that.
Well, I was inspired by the philosophy that I was living. And I love to write, and I've always written. And as I started sharing this philosophy with other people and extending it outwardly into a greater audience, I thought, people really relate to this, that this is something that's needed right now, I believe, because so many people are wanting to extend or expand on living well. It's really popular, but so often you don't get the nuts and bolts. You hear about the idea, but typically you can't relate to it. So what I wanted to give was a relatability, and I really feel that that's what the book is about, is the ability to relate on a personal level to a deeply philosophical message.
You know, the book is all about your relationship with horses. I mean, it's running throughout the book, and it seems to be, at first glance, a book about horsemanship when you read it, but it's so much more. And it shows how your philosophy, which is beautiful and mystical and very practical at the same time, is derived from your experience with horses. Yeah. To what extent is that true?
To every extent. Horses brought me home. They brought me to myself, and I was really lost. When I first began to work with horses, I was in a lot of pain and a lot of resistance. I was going to do things my way, and it didn't matter how I got there, and that created a lot of conflict in my life. But when I started working with horses and eventually met Master Horseman, I softened because I didn't judge the horses. I didn't see through this dualism or this polarity of right and wrong. When I saw the horse, I saw this beautiful creature who was just trying to survive. And I identified with that as who I was as well. I was trying to survive, though I had behavior that was ineffective. So I was able to really come home to accept myself and my pain and my behavior, and from that level begin again.
So beyond your personal ability to empathize with horses and identify with them, I mean, you draw so many parallels between the psychology of horses and humans. How much do humans really have in common with horses?
Well, on a deep level, humans have everything in common with horses and all life. On a very deep level, we are all connected by that will to live, that inspiration to be. And so on that level, we have everything in common. On a superficial level, we're very, very different because horses are prey animals. We're predators and they're prey. So that makes us completely different. So the ability to bridge that gap is an amazing awareness that you can be so different and then find the oneness. Because between predator and prey is a lot of defense. So when you can undo the defensiveness, you find the unity. And that's what it's about.
You point out how horses, even if they have a peaceful and happy life, can still have the habit of fear.
Mm.
You know, they're kind of geared that way.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like that, too.
We sure are.
So they're a mirror for us. Is
absolutely.
What your story shows time and time again.
Yeah. It's a great mirror, and anyone can look in that mirror. Anyone. You don't have to ride a horse. Just observe them, you know, and you can see similarities. And frankly, I use horses because that's been my life experience. But you can also look at dogs or cats, or you can look at the river, or you can look at the forest. You can find the nature of life in all life. And if you're willing, to me, that's probably the most important component, is being willing to look. You'll be able to see the lessons that life offers. And that's what happened for me. And it happened to be with horses. And when it's a 1,000-pound animal, it's very easy to see.
Right. And it's also very easy to be afraid. I mean, that's a powerful animal.
Sure is.
And to relate the way that you describe it in the story is very moving.
Mm.
It makes me want to get to know a horse.
Good. I'm thrilled to hear that because they're here to teach.
Well, you talked earlier about the relationship between pain and resistance, or at least I picked up on that.
Right.
What is that about?
Well, they kind of work together, don't they? And fear. I would put fear into that mix as well.
Right.
Because resistance really comes from fear. I mean, we're not going to resist what we love.
Yeah.
We're going to resist what we fear. And so often it takes over. That resistance becomes what I call, in the book, I call illogical logicals, where there's the sociological, psychological, and physiological element of fear, and that's survival, where we fight. But when that becomes a way of life, that's where it becomes ineffective. So horses can demonstrate that fear has a purpose. It's there to keep us alive, but it's only meant to be temporary. It comes up and it goes back down. If something scares a horse, they'll react and then they'll go back to grazing. But we don't. We hold on to it through our memories, through our stories. And in fact, we'll not only settle for remembering it, we're going to tell everybody else and see if we can get them fearful. And then that's the sociological fear that resistance comes. So often we don't even know what we're resisting.
And you talk about how we live from old perceptions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's easy to repeat the same mistakes over and over without realizing why we keep having the same outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we keep resisting,
mm-hmm.
and we keep repeating that story.
Mm-hmm.
We get other people to believe it.
And it grows.
Right.
Although I also say that we repeat to resolve. That's the opportunity in repetition.
Mm-hmm.
We get to... I have a whole chapter called The Do-Over. We get do-overs every day. You know, it's... And I love it because we can use hindsight, right? Hindsight's free. We don't have to live it again. We can just remember it. And then what I call re-ride the line. That's a horse term. But you can also say rewrite the script, where you'll remember something fearful, but find the choices in it, find the wisdom in it, redo it in your mind, and that's how we get freedom from the fear. Fear is here to teach, but if we just keep repeating the same mistakes, then we just increase the fear.
How has this understanding of fear helped you transform pain into something else?
Well, I always joke that the reason I have become so successful in my life is because I have a zero pain tolerance. I don't want to feel bad. I really don't. And the first half of my life, I used addiction to, numb out. But that didn't work because I needed more, and I still had the pain. So I have been able to understand, especially through the studies that I have done in the last three decades, is that pain has purpose. So when I can understand that, and I can look deeper, again, the willingness that comes up as a golden thread, I might call it, that when I'm willing to look into my pain or into my fear, I can find, what is it telling me? It's an alarm system saying, create a change. A change is good. You know, it helps us grow. We're not meant to park. So finding the purpose within our pain, being willing to have empathy and compassion for ourselves and others, that way we can bring love to pain. And then we get to practice love instead of practicing resistance. And when we do that, I am here to say we change the world.
As you point out, when we change our perspective, we change the world we live in.
That's exactly right, and that's how. If we look at pain, we get more of it.
How is it easier to empathize with a horse than another human? And how is it harder?
Yeah, well, it's easy for me, particularly because I have such love and respect for horses. I see them as innocent. Perhaps you could see a child that way, or maybe a situation that was a tragedy or something that happened, but nobody wanted it to happen. That's how I see a horse. When they act out, if they buck or kick or bite, or I don't see them as bad. I don't see them as wrong. I see them as defensive. That's probably key. I don't see horses as aggressive. I see them as defensive. So when you can look at people that way too,
yeah,
you know, and know
makes a
that
big difference.
It comes from pain, right? It isn't coming from fear. Then you can have empathy and compassion and find a way to be part of the cure, not part of the cause.
But you have to, it seems to me, you have to somehow avoid catching the disease of the emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. And you have some brilliant wisdom about emotions in your book. And I'm going to quote your book. It says, problems tend to arise when there's no guidance for our emotions. Without a positive direction, we can really get lost in feelings of fear, insecurity, sadness, and helplessness. Pretty soon, it seems that we don't have feelings, but rather feelings have us.
Mm-hmm. That's more common than not. We don't know. We become victims. We don't know what to do with our emotions. And the world is supporting that through pharmaceuticals and escapism. And there's always ways. It always will. The world won't let us down. If we're looking for escape, we can find it. But
and if we're looking for an excuse,
yes,
there's a commercial for that.
Exactly. And it goes on and on. Whatever we look for, that's the premise of the book. What we look for, if we keep practicing what's ineffective, we get really good at being ineffective. And that's what happens in the world. We are looking for escape from fear, from pain. So we keep masking it, running away from it, defending, from, you know, but we're not able to gain the wisdom There's wisdom in it, you know? And so I think that that is really what's vital, especially right now in our culture, in our country, and globally, that we have to be able to unlearn the habit of being in pain and then defending and resisting. So pain, it isn't if, it's when. We are going to have pain. There's physical pain, psychological pain. There's, you know, it's part of the process. But the piece we're not missing, I mean, that we are missing, is that we're not learning from it. And we can't learn from it if we mask it. We have to be willing to feel it.
Yeah, it's like we have this penchant for wanting to control everything.
Exactly.
And you talk about that in the terms of the shoulds, you know, and mm-hmm. you shifted your approach to the horses, mm-hmm. which speaks to our relationships with humans, where you say you shifted your approach from you should do this yes. to it's in your best interest. Mm-hmm. That's amazing that a horse can, you know, respond to that.
Yeah. Oh, they respond wonderfully to that because they don't understand the ego. They don't understand this conflict. Humans introduce a horse to conflict. When they're out...
Well, just by trying to ride it.
We put a saddle on, strap down an animal hide right in the place that the cougar lands to kill him. And they accept it. They forgive that. It's amazing. It's to me, it's a miracle. But when they react and they get scared and they respond appropriately through their own defense system, people will sell the horse. They'll judge him as a bad renegade rogue. I love those horses. Those are the horses to me that have heart. They're the ones that are honest. They're the ones that are willing to say, ouch. But you'll see, you can go through so many barns in the country, walk down the aisleway, and you'll see the horses are zoned out. Their eyes are dead. They're just tolerating. They're
it's amazing living. How you tell the story in your book about how you helped bring a couple of those back to life.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Right through the fear, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't avoid it. I tell you, I've had to learn right along with them, because if a horse bucks me off and it hurts, I have to find a better way. I have to find a better way to communicate what I want. I have to be a better person. That's what they taught me.
It's amazing how you talk about how people will judge a horse and get rid mm-hmm. of it rather than try to understand it,
right.
And in the process maybe understand themselves a little better.
Absolutely.
How can we overcome self-judgment and the fear of taking risks?
Mm. Well, again, the willingness first. Without that, it's worthless. Because if we're not willing, if we're doing it because we think we should, it will be temporary. It will not last. That's where technique and methods often come in. People are looking for a method.
Yeah.
Tell me what to do. Give me a list. Well, when I work with people, even if I was willing, which I feel everybody has their own answers, but we can ask good questions to find that within ourselves, because my answers might not fit for someone else, you know. But if I did tell them what to do, they don't do it. The willingness isn't there. So that's first. First, we have to, and often people hit bottom. They have to surrender. They have to come to a place where they say, one of the most powerful questions I know is, there has to be another way. When you're willing to ask that question, there has to be another way. That's where we bring curiosity in, inquiry in. And that's how we overcome fear, by becoming curious about what we fear, by being able to stay present, look into it. Doesn't mean we have to embrace it and go do that thing that frightens us, but be willing to understand on a deeper level what is the fear really about. And most often it's hollow.
Right.
Most often it's not there.
Yeah, it's easy to understand how a sense of obligation and these shoulds actually reinforces our habits of fear.
Yes.
And in chapter 4 is entitled The Shift from Obligation to Dedication. Mm. And what's the relationship between that and willingness?
Yes, that's a perfect question, because that's the key. Is that, I think, if you just think for yourself, how does it feel in your body, for instance, when you're obligated to do something? I see eyes roll when I say the word responsibility. No one wants another responsibility. We're already bogged down by too much, right? But if you think in terms of being dedicated, passionate, inspired, then the body really gets light and excited and motivated. So a lot of that shift in perspective has to come from being able to make each act a sacred act, in a sense, where we understand, like I was able to understand with the horse, when there was something in it for him, and that was freedom, non-resistance, peace. That is what the willingness just grows when you have that. But if you say, oh gosh, just another should getting in the way of a want, then we get heavy and we block that ability. So I like to, a simple task is just to say in your verbiage, in each day, change every should to the word want. Mm-hmm. I want to go on a walk. I want to work out.
Nice. That's an expression of willingness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you get in the habit. So, you know, fake it till you make it, kind of, as it used to be said in the program, I think.
Right, right.
You know, uh-huh. But it's just one way. We can all find different ways to implement this wisdom. What I'm wanting to point to is that there is another way.
Yeah.
And then every horse I work with is different. Yesterday, I rode my own horses. I have two of my own, and they were completely opposite. One couldn't do enough. He was just performing. He was like, oh, what are we going to do next? And the other one was saying, yeah, convince me this is a good idea. In the same day. Uh-huh. So I was the one that had to come to the relationship with that willingness to adapt. You know, you can't do the same thing. I call, in the book, I have a area that I talk about the leading edge. And that's how we connect with the world. So some people are going to want to run up and hug you. And other people, that would be too much.
Right.
So we have to be able to feel what we feel and adapt accordingly. And the way to do that is through our heart, not through our head.
You know, you talk about non-resistance, and another way of putting that is acceptance.
Mm.
And that segues into contentment. And you reflect on Ray Hunt, one of your very profound teachers.
Absolutely.
And I wish we had more time to talk about them, because there was a few of them in the book.
Right.
And he says, know when you're well off. It's like he's teaching the ultimate course in acceptance.
Absolutely. That's what it felt like to me, was that when so often, I think everyone can relate, that this world wants more. We don't stay in our successes.
Right. It's always more, more, more.
Yeah. Everything is a means to the next end.
Right.
We're not content. But I like, when I ride my horses, I like a lot of non-doing. I'll get on and I'll just wait. I just sit for a moment and I'm reminded of this amazing animal, this friend, my partner. And I feel so good. And then we go and do something, and that's a good start. You know, we start off with the sense of presence. The other thing is that I end the ride that way. So how we leave something is how we find it. So it's really important, if we don't feel our successes, we don't sit with that feeling of accomplishment, we're not likely to grow from it. We're still growing through defensiveness. We're still running from something, you know. And so I think that it's really important to feel content with a learning frame of mind.
Right.
Content with the willingness to grow.
And change.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. We change every day, whether we accept it or not.
Right.
I know I do.
I love the way you put, change is our friend.
Yeah.
I have that same phrase in my book.
You do? Yeah, oh, I can't wait to read that. It's awesome.
Hey, well, listen, I wish we had a lot more time. I love where you go on the subject of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I think you're amazing. I think you come through... Your authenticity comes through in this book so beautifully. I just really want to encourage all of our listeners to take a look at this book.
Thank you so much.
Well, I love, I'm going to just quote you on authenticity. The leading edge of inspired action is a blend of authenticity, compassion, and acceptance. And these attributes together form the basis of authentic relationships. Mm. So thank you, Mary. Thank you for modeling this for us.
Thank you.
Thank you for writing this book. There's so much more we could explore, but we've run out of time. So I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.marycorning.com. It's all one word, marycorning.com. And for those who tuned in to the Pathways show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of a new book entitled Intuitive Intelligence, which shares the theme of Pathways, personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we have been visiting with Mary Corning, author of Perfect Practice, A Philosophy for Living an Authentic and Transparent Life. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at kboo.fm, Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. And podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Mary Corning and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.